Okay, welcome to A Course in Miracles. hi, Luann.
Hi, Luann.
Hi, Luann.
Hello, everybody.
The section we're working on is this responsibility for sight in chapter 21, two-thirds the way through the text. And Jesus, at this point, set off in italics these words that are fighting words for the ego for sure, because they're saying, I am responsible. He wants you to, as a solution to your confusion, to take responsibility for what you're experiencing. It's quite a quick way to get you out of the useless efforts of making somebody else responsible. Not only does that not work for your peace over any long term, but it adds difficulty because now somebody else has to defend themselves by saying, I'm not responsible for this. And also keeps you away from blaming God for the really, really bad things in life. Cancers and deaths and, you know, the big stuff like that. Course in Miracles is actually a cure for that very conundrum of blaming God. That's a pretty hard one to escape. If God made the world and God is all powerful and God is all good and you are suffering because of something out of your control, doesn't that make God your enemy? Doesn't that say that God selected you out to suffer? Because according to classic religion, where God made the world and God is all powerful and God is loving, you must have done something wrong. Right? I mean, what if God is all that and you're suffering, you had it coming. You deserve it. How else can you reconcile God making the world and you suffering for something out of your control? You have to blame God. Course in Miracles is a solution to that conundrum. I ran into that early in my, I was raised Catholic and I did the whole catechism and everything, and I just couldn't make sense of what I knew about the world and what they were saying God is loving and all powerful. I just couldn't make sense of it. So Course in Miracles is gladly a high authority solution to that conundrum. And you may now return to the presence of love. You may now return to the idea that God is love and loving. Because God did not make the world.
Right.
That is really good news. It's really good news. Now, that's kind of the good news and the bad news, because if God didn't make the world, who did? Where do you get to point the finger for the missed opportunities and suffering in your life, for the things that went wrong? Now, where do you go? Apparently, according to Course in Miracles, there isn't karma. So it isn't your past life you get to blame and suffer through a life. It isn't some all-powerful God who's got a sick, twisted experiment going on with your life. No, who do you get to blame now? So this is A Course in Miracles, a steep, quick path to reconciling what you're experiencing with your ideals, what you're experiencing needs to be reconciled with your ideals. Another way to say that is your ideas brought to the truth. To make sense of the difficult moments in life when all you want to do is be happy and loving and lucky. Take luck over skill any day. Just want to be happy, you say. Course in Miracles is this correction of mind that will allow you here and now, in your present state of understanding, your state of being, to be able to let go of the chaos, to be able to actually see through the chaos as self-made. Meaning, without your cooperation, you won't suffer. But with your cooperation, you know the perfect buttons to press to make you unhappy. You know what buttons to press better than anybody to make yourself unhappy. And if you're ever unhappy, the Course is pointing out, look for the finger on the button. It's going to be yours. Ever unhappy. Folks, ever unhappy over anything, anywhere, even the physical maladies, where there's obviously, you know, a fire or deaths or cancer or, you cut yourself deeply. We're being asked to wake up spiritually from a material victim world. This section will take you wherever you happen to be. And each time you go through this book, you'll find this section has changed and matured. And because you've changed and matured, because you've allowed yourself to take a little more responsibility at a higher consciousness. And so it's like a staircase that is waiting for you to climb. So the paragraph we're going to study tonight is pretty strong words. Has some of the big multi-syllable words. The word salvation is mentioned in tonight's paragraph. And salvation just means your awakening to the truth that you've already been witnessing, but maybe you haven't looked at it with this eye open. If you're only using the body's eyes, this is all fighting words. And, you know, it's better to get a lawyer and a doctor and whatever else you need to make your life more comfortable. But if you start to open this eye, then you've touched some peace that goes beyond what these eyes can understand. And it's also touching on the eternal, your true nature. So it becomes really worth investing your time in, because it has a sense of eternal to it, something the world can't possibly afford. Salvation is simply waking up to your ability here and now with your mind, your current mind, to not be a victim at all. That is what salvation is in A Course in Miracles, is you actually knowing. That's a big word, knowing. It's a really big word. You think about what it really entails. But salvation is where you finally arrive at a knowing for yourself of the fact that you are experiencing only your own thoughts. You are experiencing... I got that. You're experiencing your own thoughts. There isn't something out, any power outside of you or force. And I'm saying the same thing, but I'm using slightly different words now. There is no experience even that comes to you from the outside. All this is a bunch of awakening words, but that's what salvation is. Salvation is where you arrive with an internal knowing, a sense of completion even, a sense of rest occurs to you, a sense of maybe even humor. It can be funny. Huh? It really is just a relief and a silliness of how much you worried that you didn't have to worry. All this is about you waking up that you only experience your own thoughts. Now, when I say your own thoughts, at one level, I mean you, the person in the mirror. Yes. And that's a great place. So you have to start there. But then at another level, when I say your own thoughts, it's not the person in the mirror. Because I'm going into a bigger context, a bigger context. From a bigger context, like the dreamer of the dream, or that it even is a dream at all, what you see in the mirror has no control over that, and it looks like a victim. Course in Miracles, however, continues to offer you all the time that you only experience your own thoughts. So the you must not be the one in the mirror when it starts talking about the bigger context of dreaming the dream and all brothers, these things that are way out of your control, or sickness. Sickness is far-reaching in this book. So tonight we're going to take a look at a few of the places where the Course offers you a prediction and a prescription and a description of where you're going. This is what salvation is. You know, from the perspective of Jesus, it's inevitable. You can't not be saved. You can't stay in your own personal private hell forever. You can't stay there because it's incompatible with what you actually are. The thing in the mirror could, and you could dream and dream and dream and dream again and again, another thing to put in the mirror. But the Course says in one spot, it says, you will get far too weary at some point to keep up this idea of being, living and being a body. And soon thereafter, it talks about the body mind and the spirit mind. And it says that hang on a second, I'm working it. And it talks about that your body mind will be in service of the other mind, or your spirit mind will be in service of your body mind, depending on which one you choose, which one you value. It's a very short sentence. But it has been your experience, and it will be again tonight, that you will witness your priorities, how much is body-oriented and how much is eternal freedom, waking up. Whichever you choose to value, say your body. Let's say you chose really you want to stay in the world and have another kid or another business or make another $1 million and work it out that way. Let's say that was your choice. Your spirit mind would continue to support your efforts as you would dream up a world with opportunities and jobs or mining Bitcoin, so that you become the next Bitcoin billionaire. If that's what you really wanted to do, guess what? Do you know you could, right? There's no hand from the God that's going to reach out between the clouds and say, no. Don't continue in the world. That won't happen. So in fact, you're fully supported with whatever it is you wish to think. Other side of the coin. If you decide you want to have a spiritual awakening, if you decide you want to have a freedom that is eternal, if you decide you want to go back to knowing, being, recognizing source, so that you can truly be happy, truly rest, truly understand what's going on, and maybe even go back to perfect joy, which you know somehow, somewhere is true, then your body mind will support that effort like it is now. Your body mind has organized to get you onto the Zoom call discussing A Course in Miracles. A Course in Miracles' chief teaching is you're not a body. Wait, what? Yeah, your body brought you to a meeting that says you are not a body. Salvation is that realization that that is all right. And your only goal, your only purpose here at this level, salvation. So we're gonna just spend a minute or two just so you can arrive in the meeting, and then we're gonna jump right in and start looking at what A Course in Miracles describes salvation. The invitation that Jesus is asking you to accept. And then when you read something like, I am responsible for what I see, I choose the feelings I experience, and I decide upon the goal I would achieve, and everything that seems to happen to me, I ask for and receive as I have asked. That will be a pronouncement of your freedom instead of fighting with the ego. Let's take a moment or two to arrive at the meeting. Take a moment or two to celebrate that indeed you have done it. You have a priority in your life that is taking your body mind to come and awaken to your spirit mind. You are doing this. You're doing this right now, tonight. Your intention has shown the love you have for you. It is a return to love and the way of love. Real love can only be experienced with what is, we're calling the spirit mind. Take a moment to realize your intention is supported by the angels and the universe and everybody here, because it is calling you back to what I am. And I have called this meeting so we can all come back to what you are. Celebrate the intention of you being here tonight. It's a big deal. Anytime that you open your mind to go inward, anytime you are willing to talk about things where you would not actually be that body you're sitting in, a step is taken. And an invitation is put out in these words we'll be reading tonight. A stair will be built right in front of you to stand on. Every time you open your mind, very specifically, to be willing to not be a body. And everything that entails from that unfolds automatically. Celebrate this moment with your very presence here. You have opened your mind, if even only a little. You have opened your mind. Your body is cooperating to help you awaken to your mind. Notice how the body is waiting. It's waiting, as if to say, how can I help now? If you came here tonight for peace, you will be invited to choose peace wholeheartedly. If you came here tonight for understanding, you will be invited to understand presently. If you came here tonight to learn of love, then these words will hug you with a love that you've yearned for all your existence. If you came here tonight to experience oneness, then you will be given a vision of how everything indeed is connected. And it couldn't be any other way. Before we begin, does anybody have any comments or questions? I see, Don, your hand is up on both phones.
Okay, so let me just first of all state my intention in talking is I'm seeking to understand and to, yeah, I want to see truly, I want to understand truly. And when you say my body mind got me here, when we're talking about the ego mind anyway, I would have thought really it's spirit, it's my higher mind, it's in yoga, it's that's what got me here. that my body mind is more inclined to not be here. And what I'm wanting to have happen is that more and more and more what my awareness is in spirit, and that's what's guiding me and in a sense informing my life.
Your spirit mind does not have a problem with your body mind. Guess what, Don? Your spirit mind is never going to come save you. Your body can't possibly save you, and the ego is the body that can't possibly save you. But your mind is one. You don't have two minds. You have a thought of spirit, and you have a thought of body. And when you're thinking of body, I call that body mind. And then when you're thinking of spirit, then it's the spirit mind. But you know what? We're not actually going to go discover the spirit. We are, however, going to put the body down. Put the drug down. And that would take the ability to think about the body and undo your allegiance to it. You don't actually have some kind of a conquering. Spirit does not conquer ego. It really has to be, by the way, a miracle is not spiritual. A miracle only deals with error, right? There's no miracles in heaven. There's no forgiveness in heaven. There's no condemnation in heaven either. And there's nothing considered to be a mistake or a sin or an error in heaven. But where you need miracles and you need forgiveness, indeed, is the level of material and body. That's where all problems are. Do you see? There will never be some kind of a battle where spirit comes in on a white horse and the ego's on a black horse and they fight it out. Spirit has no problem with you playing that you're a body because it knows it's nothing. No harm done. Play as long as you like. On the other hand, you tire. You tire of investing in more body identity looking for love. It's specifically that drought you can't handle, that thirst that will drive you home. Specifically, it's your desire for love. Love is true sharing. Love is actual belonging. Love is understanding of source and being able to personally relate to another as the same as you. It's impossible in a separate body because the worlds of a separate body are competition and suffering and separation, and then everything here dies, and so it just ends. So, Don, the challenge is to be able to access your mind. There's only one mind. There's only one way. The way you got in is the way you're coming out. By that, I mean mind. You will have to access your body mind. and surrender it for not being true. There will not be a fight from spirit. We will not try to shine it away with the power of spirit. We will simply find a way with a miracle to undo the belief in body. See, body's got a big, strong argument on how good it is and how important and real it is. So, Course in Miracles puts it this way. Bring the illusion to the truth, not the truth to the illusion. That's the way Course in Miracles says it. So to go get the illusion, you're going to take your whole investment and your personal investment in the illusion, and you're going to carry that to the light, to the truth.
I'm having a hard time understanding that. I mean, I just don't. That is a. I'm not comprehending.
Well, let's try some other words. Does anybody else understand this and want to pitch in, Sundari?
Well, I don't know that this is understanding it. I might be on track or off track with respect to that. But the thing that was coming up for me is the body is a communication vehicle, a communication tool, And so it's not valueless. And the way I look at it for myself is if I step aside and invite and program spirit to run my communication vehicle.
Hey, you said it, Sundari. You said, I step aside. She said that, I step aside. I think that's only three words. I need do nothing. Course in Miracles says it in four words. Wait, nothing is one word. I need do, still four words. It's the same thing that we learn in chapter 18. But it's no small thing for you to step aside.
But
it's no small thing.
No, it's everything. It's like, because that's the only way that things work.
It's the only way. Is for you, because of how powerful you are, you must step aside. And Rob, what do you got?
That's juicy.
So, I guess I'm a bit of a control freak, because it's like, I don't want to, this Holy Spirit character, right? I had a hard time, like, well, I'm going to let this Holy Spirit character run my life. So what I had to do was, I have to find ways for my ego to be okay with it. It doesn't have to understand. It just has to be okay with it. So the way I'm okay with, for instance, Holy Spirit is I go, well, it's the Holy Spirit, WH, Holy Spirit part of my mind. So then, all right, I can relinquish that much because it's still me. I still get to control it. So that may be, I don't know if that helps, Don, but that's what's helped me, is a lot of these realizations, I have to come to a point where, okay, the ego can accept it this way. It doesn't really understand, but it can accept it if I tell the ego this is how it works. So I have to kind of play a game with it for it to let go of that clinch. Where it's going to say, no, I resist this course. I resist the concepts. And that's what I found, is that one by one, I'm able to just find a way to let things happen rather than try to control them. And so what you said, Don, was you want to try to understand. Well, you know, the problem is you're trying to understand with the ego. And that means you're using your brain. You're using your senses. And it's really a poor, for me, it's a poor choice. I know my senses are designed to keep me separate. I know my brain is designed to keep me separate. For instance, driving, I have to watch out for the cars. You know, okay, the cars in front of me, I can't hit that one. Okay, the ones behind me, I don't have to worry about. So there's all this separation going on while you're driving. And once you start to get onto those tricks that, hey, no, you're never going to understand, but I come to a place of accepting what the Course teaches. So maybe that helps, maybe it doesn't, but that's my perspective.
Yeah, well, that's what I was really trying to communicate. The understanding part that you hit on at the end, that's a little not hearing. You're using the same word, but it isn't hearing what I was saying. And what I was saying in the first place was like that. Yeah, there's the ego mind, and there's the part of my mind that is inspired, that's the Holy Spirit. And the more I surrender to that, the less my perception, my life is viewed from that ego-centric place.
You said it again. You said what Sundari said. You said, the more I surrender to that. Do you see how you must be surrendering your false image? You're not surrendering your true image.
No, I'm not.
In fact, you're anticipating your true image and your peace and your happiness and your joy. You're anticipating that to become more awake and more present.
Yes.
You must be surrendering the block. You must be surrendering the false. That's what a miracle is. A miracle is surrendering the false and then seeing the true in the exact same place. It is a translation from darkness to light. And with it comes a very light feeling. That's why I love the word enlightenment. But make no mistake, folks. You must deal with the errors that you hold precious. And that is going to take looking at your body mind one more time so that it can be released. That's what forgiveness is. It is release. Release of what? Not release of the holy, good, and just. No. Release of the false. Forgiveness is release of your stinking thinking, the habitual stinking thinking. But you're not going to release something you think is true. You're not going to release something you think is precious. You're not going to release something you think will bring you happiness tomorrow if you play your cards right. Which is why the miracle's required, and miracles only deal with error. That's why they're not holy. If you're not dealing with holiness, you must be dealing with some other part of your mind, and this is my point. I know it's kind of hard to reach for, but boy, you asked the perfect question, so good for us.
Well, I had an experience this week that I think is what we're talking about. Because I deal with depression, you know, and I see that as reflecting some wound or something.
Can I stop you right there, and then I'll let you continue? Because everybody here has had depression in their life at some point. And I would like to invite you. I said the word invitation is big tonight. Don, you deal with depression, and you have for years. I would like you to reframe that and say and understand and know that depression is your doorway to your freedom. It is no longer your doorway to darkness. Oh. Can you feel that?
Yeah. I can believe that. Yeah, I'm seeing now that I can observe it rather than identify with it.
Yes. And the Holy Spirit, with A Course in Miracles, page by page, will use your thoughts of depression. You will, day by day, with one lesson after the other, it will reframe your thinking, your depressed thinking, if you will read it out loud.
Okay.
If you read it quietly, it's too easy for your depressed mind to quash the sentences. But if you read it out loud, the Holy Spirit now, these beautiful, powerful words will come out and around and come back in, and it will go right over your and through your ego. It's amazing how powerful that is.
Well, I had this experience this week that was very encouraging. So the depression is a pretty much an everyday kind of thing. And the other night, last night, we went out to dinner. I was feeling low. My wife and I, we were both kind of just not feeling so well. In my case, I'm more like depressed, it seems like. I seem to be depressed.
Can I say one more thing? Because while you got me on the phone here,
yeah.
Indeed, I just want to add in one more word in there in your sentence. Because everybody, when you speak, you hear what you're saying first and foremost. Who knows what everybody else hears? So watch your words, and watch your words very carefully, because you are teaching yourself.
Okay.
When you speak. So I'm going to add a word to your sentence. You said, I'm depressed. I want to add a word, because you're a Course in Miracles student now. I want you to say, your ego is depressed.
Thank you.
This begins a separation, appropriate use of separation.
Okay.
The ego loves being depressed. It loves being sick. Also, for people here who are dealing with illness, your ego is sick. Your ego is depressed. Your ego is angry. Your ego is a bad driver even.
Okay.
You must begin to separate yourself from the ego and do it with your words. And the more vigilant you are with choosing your words and choosing your thoughts, the more you will start to feel like Velcro being pulled apart. You start to feel your identity waking up and your freedom returning. This is the land of the ego. Please continue.
So that would be like, be vigilant against the ego. Would that be appropriate?
Yes, you are vigilance. That's correct. For the ego's treacherous ways.
Yeah, it's okay.
It's thinking. Yeah.
Okay. So I had this. Okay. So we're coming home. We're not too far from our neighborhood. We're still on the freeway, and I'm feeling depressed and just kind of internal with
your ego's feeling depressed.
Thank you. I appreciate that. The ego is feeling depressed. And part of one of the lessons came to my mind, and that was I remain as God created me. And then there's more to that, and the one I'm thinking about. So I said that inside. It just came to me. And I noticed it, and then I let it go and continued driving. I was driving. And as I came to the exit, I was pulling off, all of a sudden, an image came to my mind. And it was an image of a little tiny, tiny flower that was growing out of this broken-up blacktop, which, in fact, I had noticed in my driveway the day before. My blacktop driveway is breaking up. It's old. There's a crack. And there was this little flower, little green foliage and a tiny, tiny purple flower. And that came to my mind. And I noticed it, and I use it as a symbol of spirit saying, you know, in the midst of this arid, okay, I'll say it, ego, there is life and there is love and beauty and hope and possibility for blooming. So then the story continues, and with that, a smile came to my face, and I was uplifted. So we're driving, and so I decided, well, I'm going to share this with my wife, you know, like, come on, celebrate this with me. Look what happened, you know. And my wife just kind of like, she's not the kind of person who would go, oh, yeah, sure. She just wasn't enthused. She didn't join. She didn't rally with me, you know. And so my ego, I'm glad you really pointed that out. My ego, its inclination was to say, you can't even be happy for me. You can't be happy with my sense of being inspired and that there's hope here and all that. So that's where my ego was going.
It sounds like an ego to me. Critical.
Yes.
Judgmental.
And then what came to me was compassion and empathy. And I said to her, I said, you're really not feeling very well.
Look at that.
No, and she had said that.
John, that's a shift in perception.
Pardon?
That's a shift in perception.
Yes.
For you to suddenly decide, instead of proceeding from your ego's point of view, you decided to switch and abandon your importance and look at hers. Bravo.
Yeah. And it was just all inspired. It was just like, you know, I didn't calculate it. It just, that's where my, I'm grateful.
Dawn.
Grace. Yes.
Dawn, that's also a loving thought.
Yeah, it's a loving
thought. For you to switch from somebody who was critical of you in your moment of need, and you switched to care for her, this is a creative moment in this world.
Yeah.
It's the only place you can possibly find anything even close to call creation in this world. There's actually no creation here per se, but when you do something that a forgiveness thought like that, a miracle forgiveness like that, that's the closest you can come because you actually woke up for a moment and you loved.
Yeah.
You loved her. I love it.
Yeah, that was great. I just wanted to share that as a
bravo.
A testimony.
Bravo, bravo, bravo. Thank you. Beautiful, beautiful.
I think, Andrew, you just gave for me the word I've been waiting to hear. And I don't know what Don thought was the cause of all this, but for me, that's a miracle that caused it.
Indeed. It was a miracle.
Okay.
Sorry. Yep.
Great. I am grateful for the miracle.
Thanks for teaching us all.
Yeah.
Sundari, what do you got?
Well, I'm going to leave right now, and I just want to say goodbye to people. But they're also, I just want to highlight what I thought you said that it was so, so big a deal is to take away the word my from the depression. And it was interesting. At one point, I asked David Hoffmeister a question about my daughter and my, you know, and he said, my. Mm-hmm. For some reason, I got it. You know, I got it at such a deep level that for the next year, I tried never to use the word my house, my car, mm-hmm. my son, my, you know, it's, and it became, so I'd sign notes to my kids, the mom.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. And I'd think of them as the son, the daughter, the house, the car. And it made a huge difference.
The Course says the only proper use of separation is to separate yourself from your ego.
Oh, thank you for saying that, because I think it was really, I just wanted to highlight it. It was.
Thank you for highlighting it.
Would that be the, instead of my son, it's the ego's son or my ego's son?
I just said the sun.
No, I know you did, but I was just trying to add a little bit more to my understanding that it's like in the realm of my ego, it is my son. You know, he is my son.
Yes. But if you're thinking of your son as a body, it's your ego's son. Yeah. If you're thinking of your son as a flower of love, then it's your son indeed.
Oh, God.
An eternal reflection of love is your son indeed.
God bless. Thank you.
Good, Don. Good, good.
Thank you.
You see, it's all the same mind, and everything is now presented to you to be translated by the Holy Spirit. Before Course in Miracles, you only had the whimsical thoughts of the unholy spirit, and, you know, it's pretty treacherous. But now you have another voice in you that can translate whatever you think. And using the same mind that's thinking it can translate it and bring you to the holiness. You bet. That's also coincidentally when the Course says save the world, it's exactly what it's talking about. The translation from something that is temporary and dark to eternal and light. Like we just did with Dawn's son. Good, good. Beautiful, Dawn. Thank you, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, everybody. Turn to page 449. 449, chapter 21. And look at paragraph 6. Okay. I'll remind you that in the previous paragraph, we were talking.
Andrew, I wasn't listening. I'm sorry. Oh, where is it?
It's page 449. Middle of the page on 449.
Okay. Got it.
Okay, so now I'm just going to read this previous paragraph to remind you of how much work we accomplished last week before we read chapter 6. I'm reading 5. It says, the world you see, okay, the world you is not capitalized. The world you see, right, is but the idle witness that you were right. Well, this witness is insane. You trained this witness in its testimony, and as it gave what it saw, bodies, mind, unfairness, guilt, sickness, back to you, you listened and convinced yourself that what it saw was true. It's just a self-fulfilling prophecy, see? Because you trained your mind, your body mind, to search out body things that agree with what your body mind has established is the proper, political party, vegetarian versus meat eater, what have you, all the different flavors of the world. You did this to yourself, period. You did this to yourself. We're going to see that again and again and again tonight. See only this, and you will also see how circular the reasoning on which your, quote, seeing, end quote, rests. Because you're really not seeing as much as you're projecting. You're making it up, and then you're looking for proof that you were right. Well, this was not given you. You made this up. You made up your worry. You made up your horrors in your life. You made up the meaning that hurts. Any thought that hurts is you making up and suffering because of that thought. This was your gift to you and to your brother. He says, look, be willing then to have it taken from your brother and be replaced with truth. That would take a miracle, shift in perception, just like what Don did with his wife. He flipped. He could have fought with her and said, honey, don't you realize how important I need support right now from you and you don't seem to care? He could have fought her and probably at least got her to cry a little bit out of guilt. He could have done that. Not loving. You know what he did instead? He totally flipped it and said he cared for her and about her. He thought he put her as a priority. And he said, wow, what's going on with you? Wow, that's so loving. Okay, that's what it means to have it taken from your brother, in this case, his wife, and be replaced with the truth. Just honestly, what's going on? And as you look upon the change in your brother, it will be given you to see this change in yourself. And I have no doubt that Don saw the loving nature in his conversation, short as it might have been, with his wife in that moment. And he saw himself in a much better light as a loving person instead of a needy person. Hmm. Wow. Come on. That's what a holy relationship is built on. Hmm. Beautiful, beautiful, Don. Great, great, great example. Okay, now.
Your ego was thwarted.
What?
Thwarted? I said your ego was thwarted.
Yes. Okay. Jacqueline, I got your mute. And would you please read for us paragraph 6?
Perhaps you do not see the need for you to give this little offering. Look closer then at what it is. And very simply, see in it the whole exchange of separation for salvation. all that the ego is an idea that it is possible that things could happen to the Son of God without his will, and thus without the will of his Creator, whose will cannot be separate from his own. This is the Son of God's replacement for his will, a mad revolt against what must forever be. This is the statement that he has the power to make God powerless, and so to take it for himself and leave himself without what God has willed for him. This is the mad idea you have enshrined upon your altars and which you worship. And anything that threatens this seems to attack your faith, for here is it invested. Think not that you are faithless, for your belief and trust in this is strong indeed.
How do you like those last two sentences? This last sentence. Think not that you are faithless. He says, I got proof that you got faith for days. He says, look at this world you're hanging on to. Look at how sorry you feel for yourself sometimes. Wow. That takes some faith. Mm-hmm. Your belief and trust in this separate existence is strong indeed. Look at sentence one in the same paragraph. He says, look, perhaps you do not see the need for you to give this little offering. You know, this offering is basically this, the surrender of your precious little personal private hell. Surrendering that personal ability to suffer. You see, you could only suffer if you had something to lose. Spoiler alert. The thought of completion has never actually left you. You've just denied it and ignored it and gone on with the little ego voice. Ego voice, that's the one that suffers. So this is what you're being asked for a moment to surrender, to give over that vulnerable little voice that says you have something to lose. You can have an entire spiritual awakening on that surrender moment.
Andrew?
Yeah.
I'm struggling with an idea that I usually don't. Earlier on, you were talking about all the things that heaven does not have awareness of. And one of the things that heaven does not have awareness of is me, or you, or anybody in this room.
Teach us.
Or my suffering, or my need for help, or my identity, or my past or future, or even this present moment. Heaven has no awareness at all. It doesn't, nothing here exists to be aware of. That misunderstood can be terribly lonely. And that's the feeling I've been experiencing since the beginning of this session, is God doesn't know I'm here. God has no clue about any of this. God won't help. You said it. Your spirit won't help you. And so what can take place is my thought pattern, my ego can push me into a state of, well, okay then, now what?
Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
Are you ready for this?
I don't know.
Tim, I'm going to tell you in a short sentence and you can ask for more words if you want. The only way that you could keep anything of this world is to wake up. Because asleep, everything dies and disappears.
Yes.
If you have a true thought worth keeping that you decided when you were awake, when you came back to truth, and you decided something of here was of value, Was it a child? Was it a piece of music you wrote? Was it art? Was it a thought? It doesn't matter. If you decided to keep it, you said, no, that's actually a loving thought I had when I held my son for the first time ever. And something melted in me. One of those moments you may have decided, Dad, I don't want to let go of that. You cannot keep that in the laws of the world because you're going to die. And your son's going to die after you. And your son's son will die. And it's all going to be blown off in dust as the world spins into the dust from where it came. Which, by the way, we've proven the world came from some other world that's already been destroyed.
Yes.
So if you don't wake up, then you can't keep anything. But if you do wake up, Course even says this, all your creations are being preserved for you by your Holy Spirit. That beautiful moment that's actually worth keeping is being held for you as a creative thought. The only way you could ever visit it truly again is to visit it forever in eternity. Keeping it as a creation.
Who is it that holds that thought? Who is it that parses my negative shit, which is going to go, and the loving feeling I have towards my newborn son, which is going to stay? What's the agency that makes those decisions?
It's written down for you as a reminder in Miracle Principle 50. Who does it? Who's the agency that holds these precious thoughts? Well, let's go take a look who it is. Please turn to page 6. In the very front of the book. How can you be so sure that anything cares enough about you to hang on to these precious tidbits while you're so busy trying to survive? Or awaken? Yeah. Page 6, Miracle Principle 50. Read that for us, Tim.
The miracle compares what you have made with creation. Accepting what is in accord with it as true and rejecting what is out of accord as false. So this is saying the miracle acts as a filter.
Yep.
It screens.
Yep.
It passes some things through and rejects others.
Yep.
So then the miracle is a tangible entity of some sort. And that doesn't work for me.
A tangible entity? No. It's a filter, like you said. It's okay. A thought. It's a thought of truth to which false thoughts will not survive the light. It's a thought of light that shines away darkness. That's what a miracle is. Okay. Who does it? But still, your question is still burning, right? Who does it? Who does this work to sort through the good and the bad so that if we're Tim to actually wake up, who's cataloging all the good stuff? The Holy Spirit. Who's making all the bad stuff? The unholy spirit. And where do they live? Same place. The mind. So nothing is lost nor can be lost. It's all in mind. It's all in mind. That means there's no place for it to go to hide or to be forgotten.
I have a mind, and apparently some or even most of it is going to disappear when the dream ends.
You have a brain, and it'll all disappear. That's correct. Your mind will not disappear. Your brain will.
But not all of the mind, quote, survives to whatever the next dream might be or, you know, even the awakening.
There's part of your mind that held a dream on February 2nd, 2020 at about 3:30 a.m. your time. You had a dream.
Okay.
That's like over a year ago.
Yeah.
Where is it now?
It's in the trash bin of history.
Because of its nothingness.
I can't even remember it.
You can't even remember it. Because of its nothingness, Tim. Because of its nothingness, it's no value. It's no value. However, There are other things that are even older than that you will never forget. Ever. Because of their value.
I would like to remember what those things are.
You cannot forget them in truth. No loving thought will be forgotten. The Course promises us that. I don't have that page memorized, but it does say one of the things, I know where the reference is, but one of the jobs of the Holy Spirit is to catalog your loving thoughts. Your unloving thoughts, they let go because they're not valuable. You wouldn't keep them. They're trash.
So you know what was really of value to me just now? I was unaware that the Holy Spirit's job is to hold on to the loving thoughts on my behalf. I've not heard that before.
It's in the book, and absolutely. There's no movement of mind that is lost that is a loving thought. The ones that are unloving, they're exercises in, valuelessness or just absolute empty, vacated. They're actually not thinking at all.
What part of my mind remains aware when I stop dreaming and I experience heaven directly forever outside of time? What part of this mind that you and I are using to talk to each other? I know brains, mouths, internets, that all goes. But, I mean, there must be some part of my mind that survives the transition.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. Some part of your mind survives. Yes. That's exactly right. Because the ego and the Holy Spirit are sharing mind. They're not actually in two different places. If they were, you'd have a serious problem because that means there's no way back to truth.
Right.
And I can show you 10 places in the book where it talks about that, how the mind is a bridge.
Different time. Thank you for allowing me to be just a little aggressive.
And keep it up, Tim. I love talking about when you're ready to talk about stuff like that. I am ready to chat it up too because I love it. Ross, what do you got?
Well, I get this sense that since everything is an idea in my mind, and it's almost like a moment of awakening to say this, it's like, everybody is already in my mind when I awake because they've all been ideas in my mind already. So in other words, my father who's dead, I will be aware of the idea in his mind just like I am now. I will be aware of Andrew in my mind, whether he's alive or dead. Even though I won't be perceiving myself as a body, I'll still have the ideas of all the people I've ever met, but I just won't have a body.
Get this, it's even better than that. I think I had this is not in the book, but I had a meditation on along these lines, and it just came to me in detail what Ross is describing. It just came to me so thoroughly that when I continue to wake up and you wake up, and you get out of the illusion of being limited to just one aspect. I'm still in that illusion to being limited to one aspect. But as I wake up, as I go beyond that, what occurred to me was that it's like a huge library, a huge, huge library. Inside the library are infinitely long aisles and floors of books, and each of those books is the story of Jason, the story of Jill, the story of Andrew, the story of Andrew's grandfather who went around the world on $1.26 a day and they wrote a newspaper article about him. What was that like? Well, that's in this book. Nothing is wasted. Everything is so perfectly cataloged already. Why would you think anything would be lost that was of any value whatsoever? And I just got that infinite sense of freedom right then, that if you really cared and you wanted to go look up what it was like for you know, Jesus to crawl on the cross saying, I think this is going to help civilization embrace the idea of life after death of the body. So I'm going to go for the crucifixion. If you really want to do that, it's a book on the shelf. You go into C for Christ and you can cross-reference it and live it. Live it, not read it. If you really want to live Ross's grandfather, you can go with him. Time is, you're released from the bounds of time and you are released into true sharing. So if you want to go see what's important with the Ross mind about his father or grandfather, you get to live it and cry the same tears that he will cry of joy, of understanding. Do you understand? You see, I got this entire thing just wrapped up and I said, wow, there is no limit. Truly, there's no limit.
Perfect communication is perfect oneness.
Indeed.
So you can access it all because it's perfect communication.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Nothing of value would be lost. You see, the entire concept of loss, that's the ego thought. It does not make it true. The Course talks about this. Any loss is the same as death. Any loss is the same as death. And the Course says, look, there is no death. The ego needs there to be death. So there's urgency and seriousness and guilt to spread around. And
I have a maybe a beginner's question, probably is, but if there is no loss, but does that include the ego? I would suspect that when, for me, it's like if I let go of my ego, all there is the holy mind. And that's the only thing that would not have any loss. Is that possible?
Okay. It's too simple to say yes, because it would be correct. You have to understand that your ego at the lower levels of thinking, your ego is like an enemy, you know, but as you start to read more and more Course in Miracles, you realize there is no enemy. There is no loss. Your ego is a thought of separation. No harm is done. It's just like a horror movie versus a wonderful movie about happiness versus a horror movie versus a movie on essence of happiness versus a horror movie. They're at the same level and you give them the meaning. Horror movies, people love them. Billions of dollars are spent making horror movies where people end up, you know, cutting the heart out of somebody and putting it on the table, watching it take its last few beatings while the body slumps on them.
Enough. I don't go to horror movies.
But people do. And there's no loss there unless you think there is. In fact, for people who like horror movies, it's great fun. They get their friends and they go see the latest horror movie. And then there's the other of us who will say, I don't want to do that. I'm going to wait till the exact same studio makes a movie about the essence of happiness. You know, what the bleep do we really know? It was so fun to watch, wasn't it? This movie on metaphysics and how powerful is your mind? It was so fun. It was just a joy to have the same tools, the same camera that was used last week to film a chainsaw massacre was used this week to film the ideas of two people actually communicating beautifully in the next movie. So you have to start to see that the ego and all the machinations of the ego is simply trying to make a movie on separation. There's no sin. There's no loss. There's no death. And folks, there's no evil. But thoughts make it so. That's it.
It's not exactly my question, though, I don't think.
if you wanted to keep your ego, you could. The thing that you would lose is the truth of separation. Truth in quotes, right? Because that's impossible. Separation is actually impossible. You asked about, would your ego disappear necessarily? Tim's talking about a piece of his mind that is well aware, really, of ego thoughts, of physical world and all sorts of things in the world that he's identified with and familiar with. Maybe even he's written some music or he's got some great photographs or what have you.
Okay, so those people who like horror movies and enjoying them, they're getting joy out of it.
Yep.
And their mind, which is the same as my mind, would keep that, the joy.
Yep.
But
yep.
Does it keep the horror too?
Yeah, they will keep the horror, but they will lose the loss, if any loss is possible and true.
Okay.
I can watch a horror movie and I know they're not true. And I can still see why people like them, so I don't watch horror movies either. But I watch romance movies or I watch adventure movies where I know that these people didn't actually go on that adventure. There's a camera and the crew and it took 7 days to film 12 seconds. I know all that. I still enjoy it. Absolutely. Avatar, not a true movie. It's a real movie, but it's not true. And I love it. It was so fun.
Yeah, I did too.
See, that's what happens when you can keep the adventure without having the loss and the seriousness.
Okay, so let's go to illness then.
Yep.
So let's say, first of all, is it my idea that I'm going to get ill?
Yeah.
And if I didn't have that idea, I wouldn't?
Yes, but you got to watch what I you're talking about.
The eye from the ego would
The one in the mirror says, no, I don't want to be sick ever. I know.
Okay.
However, as we learn, your awakening is to return yourself to being the dreamer of the dream.
Okay.
Rather than a character in the dream. Quick, everybody, page 595, paragraph 12.
Can I just ask you a question? As the dreamer of the dream, is it using the same mind that everybody else has?
Same mind, different focus, but same mind. If it wasn't the same mind, then there would be no ability to connect and to truly awaken. You would have to kill something off.
You said 595?
595, paragraph 12. And Deborah, when you get there, I got your mute. Would you please read for us paragraph 12? In fact, how much time do we have? Well, you know what? We only have 10 minutes, so we may as well focus on this because we've landed here. So since we have 10 minutes, can we pick up a little more? Okay, Deborah, I'm going to have you read sentence number 1 from paragraph 7. Take a breath and then read entire paragraph 12.
Okay, so 7 on 594.
Yes.
Okay. The miracle establishes you dream a dream and that its content is not true.
We just have to take a breath here. Because in very, very few words, your entire experience has been summarized. Whoa. Okay. All right. Bring it. Bring paragraph 12, Deborah.
This world is full of miracles. They stand in shining silence next to every dream of pain and suffering.
Wait, where are the miracles? If I want miracles, where am I going to find them, Deborah?
Everywhere.
Everywhere here.
Right where I am.
This world is full of miracles. He says that almost laughing while he says it because why? the next sentence tells us where you're going to find the miracles that you need. Deborah, where in sentence two does it describe that you will find miracles?
They stand in shining silence next to every dream of pain and suffering, of sin and guilt.
So that's where the miracles are. Finally, huh? That's where the miracles are, folks. The only miracles that you need are standing in shining silence behind every dream of pain, suffering, sin, and guilt. Are you leaving us, Don? You saying something? You want to say something?
I wanted to say something.
Okay, go for it.
Can you hear me? You can hear me.
Sounds good.
So there's, well, that's why depression is my doorway, right?
Yeah, it is. Absolutely, my friend. Well done!
Thank you.
It's the only door that you're going to walk through. It's taking up all your attention, so you may as well walk through it. But do it with your Holy Spirit counseling you through, not your unholy spirit that's only looking for darkness. Your Holy Spirit can look at the same thoughts of depression and give you a translation, a shift in perception from dark to light, literally in this case. That's where you're going to find miracles, is in your dreams of pain and suffering. But there's more in this wonderful paragraph. Deborah, please continue.
They are the dream's alternative, the choice to be the dreamer rather than deny the active role in making up the dream.
So do you realize that when you have a miracle, you have to actually stand up and out of the stinking thinking that made the problem in the first place? You have to stand up from the dream of pain and suffering, sin and guilt for a moment and look at your stinking thinking. That means that you're not the stinking thinking if you're looking at it. It's subtle, but it's dramatic. When you stand up and look at what you're doing to yourself, that means you're getting out of denial. Beautiful. And then you can actually take the role of being the dreamer rather than a suffering character in the dream. Please continue.
They are the glad effects of taking back the consequence of sickness to its cause. The body is released because the mind acknowledges this is not done to me, but I am doing this. And thus the mind is free to make another choice instead. Beginning here, salvation will proceed to change the course of every step in the descent to separation until all the steps have been retraced, the ladder gone, and all the dreaming of the world undone.
Period. A Course in Miracles in one paragraph. And right in the middle of it is your awakening. Is what is enlightenment? Enlightenment is that you return your awareness to being the dreamer of the dream, rather than some victim in the dream. Right there in the middle of the paragraph. That's what enlightenment is. And it's the only thing you need. Everything else takes care of itself. Love takes care of itself. You don't have to find love. The Course says that you actually are love, but you've been busy denying it by being a victim character in a nightmare. Kind of a horror movie.
That gets me to those, I know we're out of time, but that gets me to those three levels. And I think the third one is the dream. The second one is the dreamer. And the first one is our being the extension of our mind, being the extension of God. Is that true?
Yeah, we can say that.
Okay.
Yeah. You're waking up that way.
Right.
Deborah?
Yeah, tonight something really beautiful happened inside me of this when Tim was talking about his question, or anyway, there was this image of this winnowing of these beautiful experiences in life that we will always have as this, I don't know, fabric or something, and then everything else falls away. And I just got a deeper understanding of that when we leave this world, that we are, all these beautiful parts are still with us. And I don't know, that just touched me so deeply. And thank you.
Absolutely. You know, nothing of value you would ever let go of. You couldn't lose anything of value. If you've ever tried to write a poem, or if you ever tried to write music, or if you've ever done a sculpture or a piece of art, you do a lot of things wrong along the way. But some things you get right. And you keep those things and you build on them. And you try and try again, but each time you keep your favorite, if it's a poem, you keep those couple of rhyming words that you liked. If it's music, you keep that little riff that's in the back of your head and you build on it. And you throw out everything else that didn't make any sense. There was no loss. You kept what was beautiful and was valuable for you. This is what's actually happening. Nothing is actually a mistake except for your little venture that this is what you are. That's the only mistake you made, but you get to keep, as you awaken, anything of value, for sure, Deborah. Nothing will be taken from you. Blessings, everybody. Thank you so much. You know, I'm gonna pop us. You can say goodbye in some breakout rooms here. And this time, you can pop around into other breakout rooms.
Thank you.